We can't see because Patty, sorry.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Human Services. It's February 17th. Welcome, everybody. We're going a little out of order. I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 4074A. And Sandy, give us a synopsis, and if I can have Representative Jensen and Representative Kenny Geyer come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4074A engross comes to you from the House with 60 ayes and no noes. The bill authorizes the Board of Medical Imaging to the waiver requirements for an individual who has substantial experiences as determined by the Medical Imaging Board and who is a medical imaging employee of a rural hospital. It specifies that any healthcare practitioner may order or interpret medical imaging procedures if such procedures are within the practitioner's scope of authority. This has an emergency clause effective on passage. No revenue and minimal expenditure impact, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. And Representative Cruz, how are you today?
I'm good, Bob. How are you doing?
Great. There are not many of us left from the class of 97. So.
That's true.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to bring House Bill 4074 before the committee. I would be very, very brief so that you can move on with the other business. Basically, this bill originates with a request from one of the hospitals in my area, the LeGrand Hospital, that has a nuclear imaging program. And without this amendment or without this bill in Section 2 part of the bill, that particular program will be placed in some jeopardy. And as a consequence, it is some urgency for us to, move forward. The bill came through the House without any objection in committee, and certainly wasn't because I was some type of an expert in this area, but people were looking at the issues and appreciating it. Basically, what it does is it enables the department, the Board of Medical Imaging, to waive some of the existing requirements and observe that this is a permissive portion of the bill. It doesn't require that they waive some of the national education requirements or standards. It allows them to, if in their judgment the person has the necessary qualifications and experience, to be able to practice whatever the modality of the imaging that they happen to be addressing. In my particular case, for my constituents, it would be, the nuclear imaging, but it could be any of the others, depending on the hospital and on their needs. Some of you have the good fortune health-wise to live in the metropolitan areas will find you have hospitals there with more of these specialists available than perhaps we even knew existed out in rural Oregon. But as you can well appreciate, a small hospital that has a maximum of 25 beds capacity, there are a lot of these things that the demand is not there that will allow people to build up the number of hours required in order for them to get their licensing. And I'd be happy to answer any questions on this. I won't labor the point. It's really very simple and straightforward. But I do have my colleague here that's interested in another section of this bill, and I would respectfully turn the microphone over to her with the chair's approval.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and colleagues. I'm Alyssa Kenny-Geyer from House District 46, parts of Northeast and Southeast Portland. Very proud to have a constituent of mine shadowing me today. I was very fortunate to get a positive response from Representative Jensen with his base bill, which I heartily support, expanding the opportunity for medical imaging, access to medical imaging in rural Oregon was the base bill. So it's a great base bill. But I asked if I could do a friendly amendment to make a correction to a bill that we had passed last year. And that bill was House Bill 2104. We all passed it on the Health Committee. It came through the House, so we passed it in the Healthcare Committee. I'm assuming it went to you. I don't think there was any fiscal. And we had just thought at the time it was a suggestion by the Board of Medical Imaging to make sure that only health-licensed practitioners who are practicing within the scope of their license for medical purposes were doing medical imaging. And as I understand it, and this bill I think went through fast and I didn't really pay attention, but I think some of the concern was some of the, you know, ultrasounds that get done at malls and things like that. And so in an attempt to make sure that it was only healthcare practitioners that already have that license, it actually referred to certain medical licensees like physician assistants, licensed nurse practitioner, nurse anesthetist, and other nurses registered under the Board of Nursing. And so one of the problems almost immediately was chiropractors and acupuncturists said, well, do we count as physicians? And LC said, well, we think so. You know, we don't know till it goes to court. But there was some talk at the time of making the language more broad in terms of any healthcare practitioner acting within the scope of their license for medical purposes. That was not done. And then we found out this year, as after they did the rules, and as of January 1st when this went into effect, that licensed direct entry midwives who have been doing this for 20 years all of a sudden could no longer do it just because they weren't included here, because we had, you know, the bill last year had taken certain professions. And so we had a meeting at the beginning of second day of the session with people including the Oregon Health Licensing Agency, Holly Mercer, and the head of the executive director of the Board of Medical Imaging, the chair of that board, as well as representatives from the direct entry midwives, and talked a lot about what language does the original intent of last year's bill, but without the problems. And so the language that came up was, that we came up with and everyone agreed to and thought was very clear, was a healthcare practitioner who is licensed to practice a profession in this state and who is acting within the scope of the licensee's authority to order the medical imaging procedure, and in the next two sentences down, and to interpret the medical imaging procedure. So this bill is really just a clarifying document, same as the intent. It doesn't change it at all, and everyone felt very secure that this protects that intent, and yet you don't have to, every time there's a new medical profession out there that might expand its scope, you don't have to keep going back and changing it every year. So I would just love to comment quickly, if I may, on the three amendments that were just posted. And as I understand it, the dash 6 and the dash 7 are an attempt to clarify exactly what we had kind of sat around the table talking about. I don't see any problem with them. I just don't think they're necessary. And because he was so nice to let me do a friendly amendment on his, my concern would be without a fiscal on it that would slow this process down. And I know that this hospital really out in Baker, is it? LeGrand, I'm sorry, is really depending on this. I would hate to slow it down. I don't think the clarifying language is necessary. And in the dash 8, I actually think that it goes beyond the original intent and gets into a whole other area. So I would hope that you would move forward with the bill as it's come over from the House.
Thank you.
Bob had another point.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just one item that I didn't mention. We used rural hospitals rather than critical access hospital. We did so because rural hospitals are identified currently in statute, and it was simpler. That was Elsie's recommendation on that sort of thing.
Great. Other questions?
Any definition you do is gonna slice the pie, because you're doing rural and you're excluding Medford, for example. And so I'm going to need to look and see if they still have issues there that they could benefit from. You could do A, B, and C. You could do all sorts of different definitions. And I guess what I'm saying is we just want to make sure that we're capturing who we need to capture and not having another piece of unintended consequences in this.
Senator Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This sounds like a good idea, Bob. The one thing that I want to make sure is that the other imaging outfits in your neck of the woods might not be disadvantaged somehow in trying to compete against a hospital system. Can you make me feel more comfortable that this, by helping rural hospitals in this way, wouldn't disadvantage, say, a radiologist imaging outfit in other parts of the state?
Well, not a lot, Madam Chair and Senator Shields. Not a lot on the specifics, simply to one of the things I might say is that my daughter's brother-in-law by marriage is a physician in the area and has the the Diagnostic Center radiology clinic there, and I got no family opposition from it, which I would take as a positive sort of thing.
Good sign.
So you ran it by him?
Yeah.
Follow up, and he said no problem?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just going to say, I certainly can't claim to know the medical community in Medford well, Senator Cruz, but I do know they have two pretty large hospitals down there, and the other thing about this bill is that it says must demonstrate that enforcement would result in substantial shortage of the availability of medical imaging modality. So my guess is that Medford, regardless of the circumstances, wouldn't qualify. I mean, I think this is really targeting communities such as the ones that Representative Jensen is describing for us, if I understand the bill. Well, you certainly ought to explore, but I think that when you look at that substantial shortage language, that probably wouldn't include some of our bigger communities like Medford. I could be wrong.
And we have the Board of Medical Imaging and the hospitals that will be testifying to.
Great.
Senator Knope.
Oh, I just want to say I like the underlying bill. I think it's a great bill. And the amendment, I think, creates a little bit of ambiguity that I think the dash sixes and or sevens would probably cure. Because in my original discussions with LC, they said without that, there's the potential for there to be some possible jurisdictional issues between the medical imaging board and the boards of the other practitioners. And so I just want to make sure that language gets clarified and that we do this thing the right way, as opposed to just rush it on through. I think we can get this done, and I don't think there's any fiscal attached to either one of these amendments, so I think we'd be okay.
Yeah, Madam Chair, just Senator or Representative Kenny Geyer, your comment was that you didn't necessarily object to the sevens rates, you just weren't sure they were necessary.
Right, six or seven, and I think it's a great point to raise, and since medical imaging is here, and maybe LC could come up and, you know, my impression was that we had that this is extra clarifying language. Is that necessary? I have absolutely no objection to it. I begged him to add my thing on, and I hate to do anything to slow him up, but certainly I would ask the same question of Board of Medical Imaging, and LC, I have no problem other than I don't want to complicate his bill.
Okay, well, Representative, let me say, sometimes extra clarifying language is not necessarily a bad idea.
Yeah, so I encourage you to ask them, and I'm eager to hear what they say.
Okay, great. All right. No further discussion. Thank you. And what, since I see Representative Greenlick, I'm just, we're just going to be on hold. I'm going to open up Senate Bill 4013 and have him testify so he doesn't have to spend time through the rest of this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4013 authorizes practitioners to electronically transmit prescriptions for Schedule II drugs, controlled substances in non-emergency situation, declares an emergency effective on passage, no revenue impact, minimal fiscal impact, left the House floors with 58 ayes and 2 excused.
Madam Chair, I'd point out that the good representative was also chief co-sponsor of the last bill we heard. So.
Yes. And I would say the same thing about that bill and this bill, but I'll say in a minute about this bill. Thank you. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenock, House District 33, and I'm very pleased to be here to speak on this bill. This bill came up in the bill is a very simple, straightforward bill. It gets the state law in confirmation with the federal statutes on the ability to e-prescribe of federal Category 2 substances. It somehow just got left out. It got put into the House, introduced too late for the taste of your presiding officer, and didn't come out of the House in the last session. We've started it very early. We have no opposition to it. It has some very important public health effects because right now, when there are so many paper prescriptions floating around for things like Vicodin and similar products, it leaves too much room for forgery and for upping the number on prescriptions from 10 to 100 and a variety of other bad things. As I say, it had no competition. It came to us originally from the district attorneys who thought it was a good idea. Rob Pivette's the first one that brought it to me early in the session. I hope you will move it. I understand there's a potential amendment to it. I don't know what the amendment's about, but right now there's no opposition to this bill, and I would be nervous about putting an amendment on it that may get some opposition. So I would ask you to be very cautious about putting any amendments on, which are just rumored to be. I haven't seen them. I don't know where they are.
Representative Greenlake, there is a potential. I certainly have not given permission. I don't know if anyone else on the committee has given permission, but I have not given permission yet to have this drafted. Usually all amendments to the bills that come to this chamber, I like to go through Sandy. But this is it's a step therapy based on the Senate Bill 1539, prescription drug coverage, the step therapy bill for persons that pay for or reimburse claims for prescription. I'll be bringing someone up to talk about it anyway, but I said that we would at least hear it, but you can come back on down when we get to this bill next.
No, I don't have any issue with the substance of any amendment. My issue is you have a bill that has no opposition here. That's an important bill, and I just would get nervous about adding something to it that, you know, if you have 6 votes, I hate to go for 4.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just before he goes, I would just like to thank you, Representative Greenlink, for bringing this bill. As a practicing physician, this issue has driven me crazy for years, and I've never understood why the one kind of drug that we want to control the most, we have to prescribe in the least secure way. And I'm very grateful to you for bringing this bill and very glad to be able to support it. So thank you very much.
We were in a doctor's office, and the doctor needed to prescribe Sudafed for an airplane trip that was coming up. So we left the office. We went down the elevator, left the office. We were in the car. We got a phone call in the car. Wait a minute. You need a paper prescription for the Sudafed because it's a Schedule II, state Schedule II drug, as we put it on. And we'll run down and meet you at the front door. If you drive up to the front door, my nurse will run out and give you a paper prescription so you can get Sudafed. I mean, it's just
Makes me crazy.
Madam Chair, my only concern with the bill is your sponsor list is somewhat suspect, but other than that, I think it's fine.
Well, you know, sometimes you're forced to add people as a co-sponsor who you need to worry about. But I thought maybe the chair, the Democratic chair and the Republican vice chair of both of the committees is a good start.
Well, I'll get the two docs to sign on, too.
All right. Thank you, Representative.
You're quite welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
Okay. I can leave that open, but I want to go back to House Bill 4074A and call up Patty O'Sullivan and Ed Conley Tunnel.
And Mark Mayer is here.
Oh, and Mark's here to do any clarification for us, too.
Would you like him to speak first, or? I'll be very short.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Patricia O'Sullivan. I represent the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. Representative Jensen came to us and asked if we would help support this bill, and that's what we've done. He did a very good job of explaining it. The one thing that he left out at the very beginning was that this is also a fix-it. This was as a result of a bill in, I believe, 2011 or 2013 that required imaging technologists to get these side modality licenses and certifications as well as their main license. And that's when the hospital in LeGrand came up with the problem of not being able to get that extra modality certification for nuclear medicine because it requires 8,000 practice hours, and they just don't get that many in LeGrand. It's not a problem in the metro areas. So the bill only applies to type A and B hospitals, which is different than the cause. That's a federal designation, and the A's and B's are a state statute. So, and I would like to address Senator Shields' question. We've not heard from anybody else, Senator Shields, that this has been a problem, only from a couple of our small hospitals. So I don't know if there's any imaging clinics out there in the small areas that will be affected by this. My guess is that we'll hear about it pretty soon, if there is. But we haven't heard anything from anybody, not as a result of this bill being dropped or prior to that. So,
Chairperson Monis Anderson and members of the committee, my name is Ed Conlow. I'm the executive director of the Board of Medical Imaging. The first part of the bill was some language that we worked out together with the Hospital Association. They had an issue that they needed addressed dealing with Grand Ronde Hospital, and they worked with us closely, and we think this waiver provision is a reasonable and workable language. The second part of the bill was brought to our attention by the licensed direct entry midwives, and they pointed out that the way the bill had been drafted previously, it was too narrow, and it had a list of providers that could order and interpret images, and the original draft actually did not have a list. It really had the language that's in here now. This appears to be a workable language from the board's point of view.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Cano.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark, I was reading Section 3, page 2 of the bill, lines 16 through 21 and line 23, and it appears as though it appears as though the bill transfers some authority from the individual medical professional boards to the medical imaging board, and I don't know if that was intentional or not, but it seems like that if we were to add some clarifying language, maybe from the dash sixes, that would clear that up. Can you comment on that?
Senator Knope, Mark Mayer from Legislative Council. Yeah, I worked on these amendments specifically for you, and the idea was the language now reads, is ordered by a healthcare practitioner who is licensed to practice a profession in this state and who is acting within the scope of the licensee's authority to order the medical imaging procedure. And the idea, of course, as Ed Conlow just testified to, is that the intent was to broaden the scope of authority language for all providers who have that scope of authority in their practice. But scope of authority there is a little ambiguous as to who's making that determination. So we added in the language through the A6s that basically says, as determined by the agency that licensed the licensee, to be crystal clear that that scope of authority is determined by the licensing agency, not by any other party that has power over these provisions. So, yes. Does that answer your question, Senator?
Yeah, I think so.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Mayor, I'm a little confused because, I mean, I'm not a lawyer. And so I guess, and maybe somebody else needs to help, but as I read lines 19 through 21, my authority as a physician comes entirely from the Oregon Medical Board. And so I'm not sure why we need any additional language to clarify that it was the medical board that gave me that authority. I mean, I can't really imagine that anybody would think that my authority comes. I'm not being critical, Senator Knoop. I'm just, I don't understand where the ambiguity is right now, because I don't think that my authority comes from anybody but the medical board.
Senator Steiner-Hayward, that was the intent in drafting the original language, and if I were asked to write an opinion on the matter, I believe that I would weigh in your favor on the interpretation of that particular language. I believe the A6s were drafted just to make it crystal clear about the defining agency, licensing board's definition of scope of authority there. So to leave nothing to question.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, I'm kind of reluctant to try to make the perfect the enemy of the good here, but that's my personal opinion, and we'll hear from others.
And explain what the A7s actually do. I know that was the A6s, and now the A7s.
The A7s contain the same clarity language, and then we included, at the request of I can't remember, some outside party requested some language just to clarify that these amendments to the statute don't affect existing authority by those practitioners who are currently listed in statute with regard to the ordering and interpreting of these medical imaging procedures. My personal opinion is that the A7 language that's set forth in Section 4 is unnecessary for a court to get to that point, but it certainly doesn't hurt for a court to get to that point. So,
thank you. All right. Any other discussion? Any other questions? All right. I would, my preference would be just to move the bill as is. I can understand the A6s and the A7s to be crystal clear, but if we sent for an LC opinion, they would say that this bill, that the bill would be interpreted as, you know, not giving the medical board any power over the interpretation and ordering of by providers.
I prefer not to amend it.
Madam Chair, I just, if we can get additional clarity in statute, I see nothing wrong with doing that. I don't think it changes what is or what intent is. And I know it's amendments and all of that, and we'd have to have more paperwork come, but that would be relatively quick, because I think the fizz res on this would be zero.
Hey, yeah.
I think, you know, I'm slightly worried about jeopardizing the good representative's bill here, both of them. So I think I would feel comfortable moving this, and if we need to make further improvements in 2015, I'd feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah, that would be my preference as well, Madam Chair.
Senator Knoop?
Yeah, I'll be a no if we don't include the dash six.
Madam Chair, I would point out that the purpose of this bill is to fix a glitch we did last time, and so now we're setting up another potential glitch. And so if we have the opportunity to get it right this time, and you know, I think the sevens probably go further than they need to, but I think the sixes are just enough clarity that I don't think we'll have to revisit the issue.
Okay.
Madam Chair, can I ask a question? We talked a lot about the first part of the dash sixes, lines 1 and 2 of the dash sixes. We didn't really talk at all about lines 3 through 5 in there, and I'm not sure why we needed that part, because I think we...
May I speak to that, Senator Steiner Hayward?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
That was a LC a change that we made in order to model that subsection a little bit more closely after the previous subsection, just to make the language match a little bit better. It was something that it's not necessary and it wasn't asked for. It was just to kind of basically improve the underlining statute.
Yeah, to my mind, if I may, Madam Chair, that really gets me very much more confused than I was from reading the current language in lines 22 and 23. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm just getting really confused now.
Well, what I'd like to do is talk to the proponents of the bill again after they've had time to really digest the amendments, talk with the committee members again, and we'll move this bill for next Thursday, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, we'll work session it next Thursday.
Like 3 days from now?
3 days from
now. Okay.
That is the next Thursday.
Well, next Thursday makes me think about a week from Thursday. I'm sorry.
That would be a week from Thursday.
Okay, fine.
And then if
on Thursday means 3 days from now.
Madam Chair, can we have some clarifying language on that? Possible amendment would be helpful.
If there is that way, if there is consensus, we'd have time to get the fiscal on the revenue also. So let's just, with that, any other comments? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 4074, and let's go back to 4013. Okay, and Nikki Trzeciw and Jim Markey and Rob Bouvet.
I guess I'll start. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rob Bouvet, legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties, also wearing my hat as legal advisor to the Oregon Narcotics Enforcement Association. I won't spend a lot of time explaining the bill. Actually, Representative Greenlink did a great job explaining the bill. What we have left is a remnant part of our statute that requires a paper script prescription for Schedule II controlled substances. That mirrored federal law for a long time, but a little under 2 years ago, DEA finally, after a long struggle with them, amended their rules to allow for e-prescribing of Schedule II controlled substances. And e-prescribing, of course, is much more secure, and it's a real win-win for docs. It's a win-win for pharmacists. It's public health and safety, avoids a lot of forgeries. So the bill itself is a very important technical improvement that will ease the lives of a lot of folks and also do a lot of good public health stuff at the same time. That's the bill. I just heard about the amendments. I guess I would echo the good representative's comments. This is a bill that has no opposition, should have no opposition, I suspect will never have opposition, and I just would caution about tacking anything onto it that could potentially draw any opposition. I don't know what the bill amendment is about, but that would be my only concern. We got a good bill that really needs to happen.
Okay, we'll address the amendment after we have Nikki testify on the underlying bill, and then Jim Markey can explain the amendment.
Thank you. Nikki Trzeciw here on behalf of the Oregon State Pharmacy Coalition. This is health system-based pharmacists and community-based pharmacists around the state of Oregon. And I really don't have much to add between Chair Greenlick and Rob's testimony here. I can tell you that the Pharmacy Coalition supports HB 4013 as written wholeheartedly, and we're excited to be able to help with patient safety and patient convenience.
Great. Any questions about the underlying bill then? Okay. Now, someone to muck it up? Is that what we're going to do?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Marquis, and I'm here today representing Bristol-Myers Squibb. We had a bill earlier in the session, Senate Bill 1539, that dealt with prescription drugs and step therapy. That bill required that when an insurer substitutes a drug that is different than the drug prescribed by the provider, that the insurer would need to tell the provider how and what they need to do to get back to the originally prescribed drug if necessary, because sometimes substitutions don't work as well as we would hope. The bill went a little bit further than that in telling insurers in some instances what those criteria should look like. And we quickly realized that insurers didn't like that piece of the bill. So we went back and redrafted language that simply deals with the disclosure piece from the insurer and says if they substitute something that is different than what was prescribed, that they have to tell the doctor or the prescriber how to get back to the originally prescribed drug and give them some additional information. We've shopped that amendment with Representative Greenlick after he testified here today, because we hadn't gotten to him earlier. He's fine with the amendment, providing that it doesn't get in the way of his underlying bill. We talked with Representative Thompson, who is fine with the amendment. We met with Chair Monis Anderson, with Senator Canope, and Senator Steiner Hayward. They can tell you how they feel about the amendment. We also went to Regents, to OMA, to LifeWise, to some other insurers, and so far we have not gotten any opposition to this amendment. However, I must say that the amendment is not in LC form, because this is the language that would go into LC, and we all know sometimes what comes out of LC might be slightly different than what went in. And the folks with the insurance industry want to see the language that comes out of LC before they give final write-off, which, of course, we would expect. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. We certainly don't want to get in the way of Representative Greenlick's good and well-intended bill. And we haven't found any opposition yet, but our hope would be that you would ask this to be drafted as a committee amendment, and then we would go back to our folks that we've talked to and others and make sure that there's no resistance in the building to our amendment, because we don't want to get in the way of this bill. And if it came down to it, we would withdraw the amendment before we would let it hurt this bill. So with that, happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Senator Steiner-Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So first of all, yes, thank you, and I have talked to several people about this. This is the first I've seen of this language. This strikes me as much more complex language than I would be in favor of supporting. I'd be in favor of supporting something a little bit simpler that just basically says a health plan must make step therapy protocols easily accessible and very clear to providers or something like that, because I think this gets a little bit too complicated. And it, when you talk, Mr. Marquis, about you know, well, if this happens and that happens, I think we just need to have a blanket statement that says, step therapy protocols need to be easily available and very clear, including relevant documentation or whatever. But in principle, as long as there's no objection, I think it's a good idea, and it was the one piece of that bill that I supported earlier. So I understand. This is just the first I've seen the specific language you were suggesting, Mr. Marquis.
Madam Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward, I'm kind of with you on the simplicity. And unfortunately, this was a negotiated thing between proponents of the amendment and the health insurance folks, and everybody kind of added to, you know, I want this or I want that. So it's not, this is not my language. So.
Okay. Well, if the chair decides that she wants to move forward with this amendment, then I'm happy to work with whoever, or with Elsie or with Sandy, to propose maybe some language that everybody could also agree on that would be a little bit cleaner.
Okay.
Than this. This seems a little complex to me, personally. Okay. But in principle, I think it's a good idea.
Since we don't even have an amendment before us, probably the insurers don't want to say anything, or do they want to come up and address that issue? Mike? Elise? Okay. The underlying bill is fine.
We won't screw it up, we promise.
Thank you, Mike Dewey, for Moda Health. Mm-hmm. And so, like, this process, this
that
is the first time I've seen this language. And just for Moda, notwithstanding the other insurance plans, there are some very specific language here that concerns me. The clinical criteria protocol would concern me. We could get in the weeds there and specific documentation if this is what we're looking at, the December 17 language.
February 17th.
Yes, February 17th. Madam Chair, to Senator Steiner Haywood, yes, we would want something very, very simple in terms of what the protocol is. We, the insurance companies, like or not, have a lot of criteria, and we'd like to know easily how to do that. And I'm concerned that this language, now I understand that Mr. Marquis said we have to have an agreement, but we'll have to wait and see how it comes out, because I think we all agree on the underlying principle for this particular process. It's just we don't want it to get real complicated.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Elise Brown for two health insurance clients. I'll address AHIP first, America's Health Insurance Plans. And as I told Mr. Marquis, that I am not in a position to say yes on behalf of AHIP. Some of my members have come back and said that they are okay with this. So we have vetted and are continuing to vet that with the rest of the AHIP members. My other health insurance client, LifeWise Health Plan of Oregon, as Mr. Marquis mentioned, is in support of this. So if my colleague, Mr. Dewey, has some ideas in tightening that, I think we're all open to that. It sounds like perhaps Mr. Marquis is as well. So thank you.
Well, here's another one that I really don't want to mess up the underlying bill, but Senator Steiner Hayward, with your ideas, come up with language with that's agreeable to everyone concerned.
Can
and
I tell you what I just wrote, if you want. You want to just
okay.
Give it to Sandy.
Yeah.
So here's what I just wrote. I know you could hear it, you can't see it, but I just wrote, a health benefit plan that provides prescription drug coverage and that uses step therapy protocols shall make such protocols easily available to prescribing providers. Protocols should include clear language about any documentation requirements to advance a patient along the protocol. Pretty simple and clean.
I'm comfortable having that drafted rather than yours the way that you have proposed it, because it looks like I'm looking at time
right.
Getting something drafted that I know will be in agreement to the committee and then be able to get a fiscal and a revenue back.
Madam Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward, I like the simplicity of what you did. I would just say that sometimes when a doctor has prescribed something and something has been substituted and now he's trying to get back to what he prescribed, what we hear is, well, he's told he has to do something, and then he does that, and the insurer says, oh, yeah, but you also have to do this, this, and this. And I want to make sure that the prescriber has all of the information up front as to what he or she has to do So I'm not sure your language gets there, but.
Well, it should include clear language about any documentation required to advance a patient along the protocol.
Yeah.
I would defer to legislative counsel, assuming that we all agree that we should submit this language, but I'd be hard-pressed to believe that wouldn't meet that concern, Mr. Marquis. I could be wrong. I'm not a lawyer.
Right.
So we'll see. If Madam Chair, I've drafted this in an email.
I would just ask that we be given enough latitude with legislative counsel that if the lawyers think some other little piece of language is needed, that we would have the opportunity to explore that.
Okay, so Sandy, why don't you then send Mr. Marquis' suggestions with deference to Senator Steiner Hayward's language, and then maybe use you as a contact in working with LC, because I think she understands the intent.
So you want two amendments?
No. One amendment.
Okay.
Preferably simpler, because then we don't get conflicts. But I don't want conflicts with Bristol Myers, right, or conflicts with MOTA. You're fine, Elise.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're at. All right.
Okay. Thank you,
Madam
Chair.
Thank you.
All right. Work on it. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 413 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 485. Sandy,
Madam Chair, yes. Did you mention when you were going to reschedule 4013?
If we get, let's shoot for Thursday.
Okay.
But if we don't get an amendment, for sure Monday. But we'd have to post it
Thursday.
By Thursday.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4085 comes to you from the House chamber with 60 ayes off the floor. This bill modifies current requirements for insurance coverage of colorectal cancer screening examination. It applies to policies or certificates issued or renewed on or after the effective date of the Act. This has an emergency clause effective on passage. There's no revenue, no fiscal impact, and I haven't heard. I don't know about amendments. I really don't.
At this point, Madam Chair, I don't think there's going to be.
Okay, so who wants to come first?
I would say.
Is it Madeline Darkling?
Dardo.
Oh, Dardo. That's a D. Okay, Dardo for Representative Williamson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Madeline Dardo, and I am the legislative assistant for Representative Williamson. Unfortunately, she's unable to attend today's hearing and requested that I read her testimony into the record. Thank you for hearing House Bill 4085. The issue this bill addresses was first brought to my attention by a constituent, Kathleen Cochran, who submitted written testimony for you today. Kathleen was shocked when, following her husband's colonoscopy, they were billed for significantly more than previously quoted. A polyp had been found and removed, and as a result, the procedure was determined to be diagnostic rather than preventative, and cost sharing was imposed. With this experience in mind, Kathleen attempted to get clarification regarding how her procedure would be coded when she went for her first colonoscopy. She was unable to get a clear answer, and Kathleen proceeded uncertain whether or not the procedure would be subject to cost sharing. This bill will align Oregon with federal guidance, which states that polyp removal is an integral part of this preventative screening process. It will help ensure that patients like Kathleen do not experience unexpected costs following a procedure that should be covered by their insurance. We know that early detection of colon cancer is critical to addressing this very preventable but deadly disease. Without clear coding practices, we risk the possibility that individuals may put off this preventative procedure if they are unaware of being burdened or unsure of being burdened with cost sharing. House Bill 4085 will provide patients seeking this necessary and life-saving screening the assurance that it will be coded as preventative and they will not be subject to unanticipated cost. Thank you again for hearing this important bill and for allowing me to stand in for Representative Williamson.
Thank you. And I am one of those who I have Providence, and I had a colonoscopy, and they said they removed a polyp, and then I was stuck with an over $800 bill and was very surprised, because how do I know that a polyp was really removed, you know? So I can relate to this very, very personally. Comments?
I think it's a great bill, and I completely agree that this should happen this way.
Well, I think that we need...
It makes no sense to not have it, because... I mean, how are you supposed to know before you go in whether it's diagnostic or screening? And the whole point of it is to take those polyps out before they turn into cancer. It's a great bill.
There is concerns. Have you been apprised of concerns regarding grandfathering in the plans?
I have been. I will defer to Jason Parks from the American Cancer Society, okay, though, to address those.
All right.
We'll be coming up shortly.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jason Parks from the American Cancer Society.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jason Parks. I'm the Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network here in Oregon. I'm here to voice my organization's support of House Bill 4085. I believe you all have my written testimony, so I won't rehash everything in there, but I want to point out that this bill is intended to clarify that polyp removal is part of the preventative procedure for folks age 50 to 75 who are just starting their recommended screening regimen for asymptomatic folks on private non-grandfathered plans. So this should just actually clarify that the polyp removal is part of the preventative process for the first, if you're going in there for your first screening, all the way through the colonoscopy to the removal of the polyp should be covered with no cost sharing. This basically just clarifies language in the Affordable Care Act and gives the state of Oregon something to actually enforce as in regards to the polyp removal being under the no-cost sharing provision. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
I do have a question. This bill would actually bring in plans prior to the Affordable Care Act being implemented, correct?
Madam Chair, that's not our interpretation of it.
Okay.
It should be only the plans that are issued after 2010, which was the start of the Affordable Care Act, which began the mandate of the coverage of the preventative services rated A or B by the Preventative Service Task Force.
We'll have Elise Brown and Lisa Trussell come, but as I've been made to understand, they want to make sure to carve out grandfather plans, but we'll have Elise and Brown and Lisa Trussell come up. If you want, you can
stay
there.
Sure. If you want.
No, you can stay there.
Yeah, I'll just move over.
Okay.
Hello again, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Elise Brown for LifeWise Health Plan of Oregon this time. And let me first start by offering an apology, as we're here with our concerns today. We're not opposed to House Bill 4085. In fact, there was no opposition over on the House side. So it's as of today that we have a concern that we wanted to raise, and maybe this is easily asked and answered, and that is our hope. So my apology goes out to Jason and to Amy Goodall with American Cancer Society, as we're bringing this to them with a surprised look on our face and disgruntled on their part, and I completely understand that. We just want to make sure we get this right. So as Chair Monis Anderson said, the way we read this bill is that it would bring in grandfathered plans, and those are the plans pre-ACA, pre-Affordable Care Act, as my friend and colleague says so cutely, if you like your health plan, you can keep your health plan, so pre-Affordable Care Act. And we read this a little bit differently, which is why we're here today to talk about that. And maybe it's something as easily as the Oregon Insurance Division helping us out with this, or even LC. I'll let Lisa dive in a little bit to the specific concern on the preventive piece of it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and ditto with the apologies. This came up from Lisa Trussell, HealthNet Health Plan of Oregon. This came up with my company Friday afternoon, and the part that The reason they believe it pulls in the grandfathered plans is under Section 2 on page 2. Line 4 on that is that expire after the effective date of this act and are renewed. And so it is, it's policies new and renewing that are first issued on or after the effective date, or policies that are expired after the effective date and that are renewed. And the grandfather plans is within that group, and that's our concern. The bill, the substance of the bill, on page 1, there isn't an issue with, because that's, frankly, with guidance under the from the feds and adopted by Oregon. This is the way that it's being handled. There was a glitch initially because of code modifiers or something that's way above my level of understanding, but that now if a polyp removal can still be part of a preventive screening. So this adopts that, but the concern is it would now apply it to grandfathered plans not subject to the zero copay preventive services, and we would just like to make sure that grandfathered plans as defined under 743.730 are excluded from this requirement.
Okay. We have Elsie here. Lori, can you come forward and let's ask you a question, a clarification on Senate House Bill 4085? And Lisa, just reiterate exactly what you, so that Lori hears from your mouth rather than mine.
We're concerned under Section 2 that this would apply to grandfather plans that expire and are renewed after the effective date of this act. So we just want some clarity that grandfathered plans as defined under 743.730 are not subject to the zero copay provisions of this preventive service, because they're not subject to the other preventive services under ACA.
Okay. Chair Amana Sanderson, members of the committee, Lori Freeman from Legislative Counsel's Office. I think Section 2 really is beside the point. The reason for Section 2 is because recently the Department of Consumer and Business Services, the Insurance Division, decided that they had the authority to allow plans to renew early, so that if they renewed prior to the first of the year, then they wouldn't be subject to the new requirements in the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. So this is just an applicability clause intended to address in the future if the Department of Consumer and Business Services decided to allow plans to renew early, that they wouldn't escape the effects of this bill for another 12 months. However, it does, in existing language, it applies to an insurer offering a health insurance policy. So any continuing grandfathered health plans would be covered under the existing language, apart from the language in Section 2.
Does that mean that this bill applies to grandfathered?
Well, it means that it. Plan? I'm sorry, Chair Miles Anderson. It applies to grandfathered plans, but it doesn't say. The ACA provisions regarding no cost sharing would not apply. So in other words, this says that it's preventive, but the no cost sharing is only triggered for plans that are subject to the ACA.
Okay. Madam Chair, if that's the way it works for me. Because that was our only concern, and it was brought up late by my technical people, was that they thought that this brought in the grandfathered plans. So as long as it's not applying the zero cost share to grandfathered plans or the, I think that they'd be, that was the concern.
All right. So it looks good. Thank you so much, Ms. Freeman. Well, it looks like this one is a clean bill. Do we have the fiscal and the revenue?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4085 and open a work session on House Bill 4085.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4085 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 4085 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Senator Hayward.
Aye.
Senator Knope.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chairman Sanders.
Aye. Motion carries, and I see that Senator Bates is listed as a chief sponsor, but then I also see Steiner Hayward on here.
Let's let her do it. She will comment.
Let's have Senator Steiner Hayward carry the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 4085, and are we done for the day?
Can I just repeat what we're doing?
Yes.
Work session on House Bill 4013 to Thursday, the 20th. Work session on 4074 to Thursday, the 20th as well. Is that correct?
And yes. And tomorrow we have, do you want to put on the record what bills we're doing tomorrow?
Sure. Tomorrow's agendas are Tuesday the 18th. We have two informationals: health system transformation opportunities and perspectives from other states in Oregon, being provided by Mary Kay Owens from the Institute for Healthcare Innovation Strategies, and in a progress report on the long-term care systems plan. That's Senate Bill 21 from 2013. Then we have a public hearing and a possible work session on House Bill 4050, which is the reinsurance of small employers that self-insure.
Is that the only one?
That is the only bill.
That's all. Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Just before we break, in a conversation in the hall, I would just want to point out to the committee that on House Bill 4074 on the A6s, lines 3 through 5 are Representative Jensen's piece of this amendment. And I would encourage the committee to look really hard at the 6s. I think it's clarification that doesn't hurt anything and may actually avoid some problems.
That sounds good. All right, with that, we're adjourned.